Before we get to this week's feedback show with Eliza Orlins, I want to take a moment and thank our friends over at True Car who have some useful tips that you might not be aware of, like how a coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean the interior of your car. You can remove the excess weight from your car as well to improve your gas mileage. And allegedly, you could place your keychain remote underneath your chin to increase its range. Although somebody wrote to me on Twitter and said that it doesn't work. I need more results from in the field. People, try that. Let me know if it's working or not. But here's something that's always working. True Car is helping people get a great deal on a used car. That's right. True Car is not just for buying a new car. With the certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience whether you buy new or used. And with True Car, you can see what other people paid, so you'll know if you're getting a good deal before you buy. And people are also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience when they connect with a True Car certified dealer. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the man who dreams of breakfast with Martin Piombo. I'm Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the episode number 10 feedback show for Survivor Ghost Island. And today we're going to be catching up with an old friend of the podcast, a young friend who has been our friend for a long time, and that would be Eliza Orlins. And we're going to check in with her, get her take on everything going on here in this season. Plenty of references to Eliza's Survivor past here in Survivor Ghost Island. So we'll check in with her. Really looking forward to this episode today. Hope you guys are too. We had a whirlwind trip to Boston this week. So many of our listeners made it out there for the live show in Boston. Got back into the studio yesterday and recorded with Ben Dreebergen and Lauren Rimmer. And if for some reason you miss that one, that was a lot of fun to catch up with the two of them. That's up on the podcast feed now. And of course, on Monday, we'll get into everything from the Wiggle Room and the Wand Off. That's all coming up on Monday. Before we get to our podcast with Eliza, I don't want to have to stop during the interview with Eliza. So I'm going to hit you with one other advertisement up front here, but it's a good one from our friends over at Canvas People, who are reminding you Mother's Day is around the corner on May 13th. Eliza, she won a visit from her mom back in Vanuatu. She won the family reward. She knows how important it is to take care of your mom on Mother's Day. And a great thing to do for your mom is to get her a beautiful canvas photo from Canvas People. They've got a great offer where you can get that 11 by 14 canvas photo at $0 pricing. You just pay the shipping. You have to text the word RHAP to the number 99000. Try to remember primetime 99000, because that's basically what he's done since the glass house. 000. So 99000. Text RHAP to that number. They will give you the access code to get your free 11 by 14 canvas photo. Couldn't be easier to do. Go to canvaspeople.com. You upload your photo. Nicole does it on her phone. Send that photo right up there to them. You set up the cropping how you want it, and then punch in that code. Get the photo for $0 pricing. You just pay the shipping. I've got one for my mom. I've got a picture of her with the boys. She loves it too. Hanging up on the wall in the dining room. It's a great gift for mom. Don't forget about Mother's Day coming up May 13th. So get that limited time offer from Canvas People, the 11 by 14 canvas photo for free. That's right, for free. Normally it's a $69.99 value, but you can get it for just the cost of the shipping. So to get your free canvas photo promo code, text RHAP to 99000 on your phone. You just pay the shipping. Text RHAP to 99000. That's RHAP to 99000. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our voicemail guest for today. That this Tuesday, she is going to be celebrating the 8-year anniversary of her first ever appearance on Rob Has a Podcast. Please welcome the great Eliza Orlins back to the podcast. Eliza, how are you?
Hey, Rob. I'm great. How about you?
Eliza, can you believe it? 8 years. You're such a fixture. 8 years that still on Rob as a podcast.
I did not know that stat until you just said it. Eight years ago, I was on the podcast for the first time. That is crazy. Well, congratulations for how long you've been, you know, doing.
Yes. Well, then, and thank you for how long you've put up with me. And it was 8 years ago. And it was during Heroes versus Villains. And I think it might have been when Danielle DiLorenzo and Amanda Kimmel were fighting over the clue for the idol.
Oh, my God. That season was so good.
Yeah.
I loved that season. My only regret in life is that they didn't let me go on it.
Yes. But one of your seasons has been so topical here. Now, it's been 20 seasons since Survivor Fans versus Favorites, and it's like a celebration of that season.
It is unbelievable. It's so crazy to me. Like, I think that the episode where Michael found my stick, not Ozzy's stick, my stick.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was almost 10 years to the day from when the episode actually aired, because it aired in April 2008, which is just crazy to me that, like, you know, people are still talking about it and that it's still this relevant thing. I mean, we knew it was big when it happened, but that was when it happened. And now here we are 10 years later, and it's still looked back on as like a very big moment in a very big season anyhow, which is really fun.
Yeah, it's crazy how time flies. And it's also crazy how you look exactly the same.
Oh, that is very kind of you. I certainly don't, but thank you for saying that.
I don't know. That's what I think. But anyway, so what have you been up to besides, we'll get into everything from Survivor.
In my life, so I am back at the public defender's office in Manhattan. You know, same, working hard, crazy cases as usual. And I mean, I just had my 10-year law school reunion this week, mm-hmm. which is hilarious. And I walked in, and this is why when you say the thing about aging, it's so weird, because some of my classmates I haven't seen probably since we graduated. So I walk in and I see everyone, and I'm like, oh my God, it's so jarring to, like, see how people have aged. I mean, most of them are married with kids, so maybe they've, like, let themselves go a little bit.
Yeah.
But everyone was, like, fat and bald, and I was like, oh my God, is it as jarring to see me? Like, I've seen myself every day for the last 10 years, so I don't know how badly I'm aging, but is it that bad?
Right.
My classmates looked old.
And you felt good. You felt good about yourself then.
I mean, listen, as someone who's remained single, you know, for this period of time, it's like, maybe you just care more, take better care of yourself.
Maybe that's it. Yes. And
although
so
you and Nicole, you know, defy that stereotype.
So thank you very much. You two are too kind. Yeah. Maybe there is something to that, because I feel like when I go on Facebook and I look at, like, people I went to high school with, I say, oh my God, what happened to these people?
Right.
I don't know. So who knows? Maybe that it speaks to the people that are the most vain, or the people that are going on these shows.
Well, that's also probably true. Exactly. My reality TV friends are all aging very gracefully.
For the most part.
Everyone looks great. So yes, maybe that just speaks to our vanity.
Maybe we have the mean people that follow us on social media and really let us know exactly. If things are getting out of control.
They keep us in check. Hey, Eliza, did you put on a few pounds? Looking fat.
Thank
today.
You, haters. Like, thank you.
I'm like, oh my God, I better not eat for a week.
Yeah. No, all right. Well, I'd love to get your take on some of the stuff that's going on in the world of Survivor and Ghost Island. And we had this interesting episode this week, which was really all about Desiree and the move that she tried to make. So first off, let me just get your take on, besides the stick and the necklace and anything going back to the Ghost Island, what's been your take on this season?
So I absolutely love this season. I mean, I don't think I've felt this way about a season about like a newbie season in years. I mean, maybe the last one was Millennials versus Gen X was the last like newbie season where I was really excited about the cast and I was excited about each episode. And I personally felt blindsided by a lot of the tribal councils and, you know, not knowing what's going to happen and finding the people are playing hard and they're interesting and engaging. So as a whole, I am really enjoying this season.
Yes. Of course, usually we get to follow all of your takes on Twitter for the season, but you have been on the TV Party app giving all of your play-by-play this season.
Exactly. This is my second season not live tweeting. You know, I have like a non-compete. So I'm only on TV Party app during the episode, but you can engage with me there. It's a free app. Download it. Corinne and I are there making trouble. We're like live broadcasting on video, chatting during the commercials. So whoever of the Wine and Cheese crew is over at my apartment watching the episode usually also appears on the video, and you get to ask them questions as well.
Oh, it's video too on the TV Party app?
Yeah, so now it's transitioned into video. So during every commercial break, one of us is on video, like answering live questions as people chat. It's kind of like the setup of like Periscope or something, where you can see the comments popping up as you're live broadcasting. And then we're in a chat room during the episode.
And could you tell me, what is the ritual of the Wine and Cheese in 2018? I feel like I was very on top of it when Steven was there, but now Steven has moved away.
Steven has left us.
What do you guys do? What does a Wednesday night look like? Is it still at your place?
It's still at my place. And people show up, you know, between 7:35 and 7:55, because I'm very adamant about timeliness. And I'm like, if you're not here for the first 5 minutes of the show, then you don't get to see the first 5 minutes of the show. We're not waiting for you. You know, I chat live. So,
right.
So I'm a stickler.
But you won't
for that.
Lock people out. It's not like in high school if you
weren't.
I won't
lock them out, but I won't rewind either.
Okay.
So, you know, different people come every week. Brian Corridan is a staple.
A fixture.
He's always here. From Survivor Guatemala, who
yes.
has become my, like, we forget that we met through Survivor because we've been best friends for, you know, over a decade now.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we've got some new additions. There are a couple amazing racers who live nearby. Brooke Cammy, who won last season.
Yes.
She won last season.
With Scott.
With her redheaded partner who she didn't know before the show.
Yes. The Perfect Stranger season.
Of the Perfect Strangers season, yeah. And Jelani, who came in second with Jenny a couple seasons ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was the blind date season.
Yes, yes.
So that's here this week. And then we had Andrea and you know, I'm still trying to convince other people. You know, I don't know. It's hard. Franny's not in New York anymore. Courtney, I don't know where Courtney is these days. She's around, but she's not watching Survivor live, I don't think, most weeks.
Yeah. Okay,
so he travels every week for work, you know, so we're gathering people when we can, but it's not as, you know, we're not as like a big of a crew as we used to be.
Yeah.
I'm sure for finale night, we'll have a very big group here.
Yeah. I feel like that we do not see a lot of survivors come out of Manhattan too much these days. And this season, we have a couple of people from Long Island, and I guess Chris Noble lives in Manhattan, but I feel like that it seems
we've got a few of them this season. James Lim lives in Manhattan.
Yes.
James is here for the first few episodes, but then he's been traveling for work
to Boston.
Yes, exactly. That's why you got to see him.
Mm-hmm.
So James, Chris, Desiree lives in Brooklyn, I think. So she's come over once. Well, oh, Dominic.
Yes. Yeah.
But he's on Long Island. And then I think there's a fifth person. Oh, Jacob.
Jacob Derwin. Derwin. You're right. Right. Yes. Okay.
So I've seen him as well.
All right. So you mentioned Desiree. This was her big episode this week.
I know.
Did you like that she tried to get something going, or do you feel like it was too soon?
Well, it might have been a little too soon, but I still like that she tried to get something going. You know, like if you feel like you're on the bottom of an alliance, what do? You have to flip it. Like this is, you know, we talk about people going out there and playing hard. And sometimes when you swing for the fences, you strike out. But this is, you know, you don't want someone who's constantly just like hitting bunts to try and get to first base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If we're continuing the baseball analogy, I don't know.
I like it. Like
someone who's not swinging at the ball, like, they might get on base every time they but they're not going to win the game that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, people who are just being comfortable, like I see Laurel, who basically sabotaged Desiree's move this week. Laurel will never win this game.
Wow.
Laurel cannot win this season. Laurel has herself out of a win. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I not supposed to curse on here? You know what you're getting into.
Yes, I know. I want you to express yourself.
Listen, yeah. I really think Laurel this week just made her just like I thought maybe she was in contention before, and now I think this game is now unwinnable for Laurel.
Why?
Because what, she's going to go to the end with Dominic and Wendell? Mm-hmm. Like, she will never win, not against either of them. And I don't even think she'll win against Kellen, for God's sake. You know, mm-hmm. like, she, Laurel could have taken this bottom motley crew of Malolos and you know, the her and Chelsea, like Chelsea, Desiree, and the Malolos, and Laurel would have been top dog.
Mm-hmm.
And now Laurel, even if she makes it to the final three, loses this game without a shadow of a doubt.
But isn't there a lot of time left?
There's a lot of time left, but Laurel now cannot win is what my prediction is.
Yeah, but she can't still make a move. There's no time left.
I mean, she can still make a move, but like what? She's going to be able to get out Dominic and Wendell now before like the kind of end game. I don't see it. Mm-hmm. I don't see it. She's put her eggs in that basket and now she's stuck with it. And now she cannot win the game.
Eliza, do you see any parallels with what's going on here to anything from in your first season? Because you were part of like the bigger group, and then there was really just Chris that was at the bottom, and there was a couple like Chad and Sarge, and you were part of the bigger group that was trying to pick off the smaller group of people, but then ultimately that bigger group started to fracture. Do you see anything that's similar here?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think that it's inevitable that that's going to happen in a bigger group, because once someone gets wind that they're on the bottom of a bigger group, you know, it makes sense to flip on the people who are at the top of that group. So on Vanuatu, you know, when we had Sarge and Chris and Chad, and they were at the bottom, it was too soon to flip. It was too soon for me to flip. You know, there were still six women mm-hmm. and four men. And so that felt too soon, because I knew, you know, we pick off three of the, I flip too soon and then it gets messed up. And then I'm finding myself in eighth place, you know? But once we got off, you know, Sarge and Chad, then at final seven, when Chris, Scout and Twyla kind of approached me and said, listen, these girls aren't taking you to the end. They're not taking us to the end. We need to flip on them. And P.S. they're about to vote you out, Eliza. Then it was the perfect time to flip. Final seven is always, I find that's like always a fun episode, because seven people is like a great time to flip, because there's four people who are, you're like, oh, that's going to be the final four. So I need to flip onto the other, you know, I'm the bottom of this or I'm the bottom of that to try and make a move.
Yeah. Final seven, final nine, those are going to be the big milestones coming up, and we'll see if potentially Laurel or somebody else from maybe Donathan might be interested in a flip at one of those points. Let me play you a question here. This is from Eric H., and he wants to talk about Laurel and her decision this week and where she stands. Here's Eric.
Ula, Rob and Eliza. Eric H., first-time listener, long-time caller. Just want to talk quickly about Laurel. Does she need to make her move at nine now? I mean, I thought that this would have been a decent time to make a move on Dom and Wendell, because, you know, when you know someone has an idol, don't you want to get them out on a blind side? And if you get too close to seven, they probably will use their idol. So when's the best time for Laurel to take them out? Because let's be honest, she gets to the end with them, she's not going to win, as we've already heard a bunch of times. Fanaka.
Yes, Fanaka, Eric. So, Eliza, if you're saying that she cannot win against them, is there any sense in switching at this point?
I mean, yes, Laurel, if Laurel wants to win this game, she needs to flip on Wendell and Dominic. She has to. Mm-hmm. She has no shot against them. And so could she still do it? Yeah. Should she have done it with Desiree? Yeah. Like, you know, I mean,
right.
She now has this situation where she has, listen, she's proven her loyalty to Dominic and Wendell. So now they trust her completely. She came to them with this plan. Desiree's going for you guys, you know, they're flipping. And so now they're like, okay, well, Laurel's, you know, Wendell has, I think, even said like, you know, I've got Laurel under my wing, et cetera, whatever it is. And I mean, I sort of think that it would be the, you know, she still needs to try to flip on them. Definitely backstab them as soon as possible if she wants to win this game, which I think she will not do, and she will not win. I think that she has that ship has sailed. She's not going to win this no matter what she does at this point.
Let's take Laurel out of the equation and let's talk about this from the Dominic and Wendell perspective. Do you feel like that there is a clear-cut favorite out of the two of them? I feel like that we're talking a lot about, well, Laurel can't win if she goes to the end with those guys, but do you feel like that one of those two guys would be the prohibitive favorite?
No, you know, it's really weird. Like, I go back and forth week to week. Like, some weeks I'm like, oh my God, this was such a Wendell episode. Wendell's totally like the king. Like, Wendell's going to win. And then other episodes I'm like, oh my God, Dominic has got this game locked up. Dominic is just playing such a smart, good game. He's doing all the right things, making the right moves, having the right conversations. He's going to win. And so between the two of them, it's, I don't know. But I mean, I think that they're the two very clear favorites to win the game. An underdog favorite to win the game would be Kellen. Mm-hmm. I think everyone else is potentially a lost cause for like a winning. In terms of edit as well, you agree?
Right. Yes, I agree. Yeah, if anything, that I felt like that this week's plan was like all the people without an edit got together and said like, hey, let's why don't we try to make a plan and vote out the people with an edit? And they're like, yeah, this was good. And Laurel was like, no, I don't think so.
Exactly.
Let's not do that.
Exactly. Like, is Chelsea even on this season? I've gotten more airtime than Chelsea.
She won immunity this week, Eliza.
I know. Congratulations to her. That was awesome. But like, she hasn't had a confessional in like maybe one this whole season.
Mm-hmm. But to go back to Dominic and Wendell, it's just interesting that they're so evenly matched that it feels like that they're both like, oh, okay, I'll take a 50-50 shot of going to the end with this guy. And they don't, neither one really seems to be looking at the other like, okay, well, I know that this person is in my way and I want to vote the other person out because they're blocking me from getting to the end.
I mean, maybe we'll see that as it gets closer to final five, final four, you know, like mm-hmm. saying, oh, listen, if I'm sitting beside Sebastian versus like Wendell or Dominic, you know, depending on who's speaking, my chances are a lot better. You know, maybe they will try to get rid of one another, like once they get to the end game. But I think their plan is just to stick together until the end. And I think it's working well for both of them. You know, it's like they're very, very strong players. And competitors.
Okay. I want to play another voicemail for you. And this is from a caller, Dominic, but it is not Dominic from Survivor and not Dominic, my kid.
Hey, Rob and Eliza, this is John and Nick. I've got a phone one for you. Imagine that you're Jenna or Michael and Desiree's there throwing you a lifeline and then Laurel wraps it out, possibly costing you your game. So who's the better friend in that circumstance? Is it Laurel or is it Desiree? What I propose is, what if when everyone asks who's telling the truth, these people backed Desiree. They said, Laurel's making this up. It never happened. And then instead of having Laurel secretly working against you in the alliance, you would have Desiree secretly working with you should she have stayed and Laurel have been voted out. Let me know what you think.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting side of this that we haven't really talked about.
That is interesting.
That everybody was sitting there and then here comes Desiree and it's like, hey, I've got a life raft for you guys. Let's vote out Kellen this week. And Jenna and Michael are like, oh, great. You saved us then. We're so happy. And then Laurel went and told Dominic and we didn't see Jenna or Michael or Donathan. I guess Donathan was, he's happy with that. But for Jenna or Michael, it's like, hey, Laurel, why you kind of screwed us over here with doing this. They all seem like that they had Laurel's back.
They did. You know, I mean, is it stupidity? Is it just like honesty? Or is it part of a larger plan? Or is it just a, well, listen, if this big lie thing blows up in Desiree's face and whatever, and it's then it, hey, at least it's not me going this week, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, Michael was certainly number one target before Desiree started trying to blow up the game. And so he might have been like, well, yeah, let me just like do anything I can. If they're going to now turn and vote out Desiree, great, fantastic. Because Laurel wasn't on board with the vote out Kellen plan. So he's just like, okay, well then as long as it's not me.
Yeah.
But it is interesting if they had just said, no, Laurel is completely lying. Desiree never said that. That would have been like so many layers of lying. That would have been awesome. That's a great, I find that really an interesting suggestion that I hadn't heard either.
Yeah, it didn't even seem like they were upset that Laurel went back and told on Desiree's plan. Like,
yeah, why weren't they more upset?
You would think that they would have been a little annoyed. Like, Laurel, this was a good deal. I don't know why you went back to Dominic and told on us.
Yeah, that would make me not trust Laurel that much. But at that point, I guess they're kind of in a make the best of what you've got. They've got nothing, you know.
Right.
They're completely outnumbered.
Yeah, the thing I could see maybe is they felt like, okay, well, oh, well, now everybody's mad at Desiree, and now Kellen and Dominic might be fighting, and now there's like a fracture in Navidi, and then this Navidi is going to split in half, and this is going to be in our best interest, because now Navidi is going to be targeting Navidi because of all this. But it just seems like that's a little bit more of an indirect play than what could have happened if they would have gone along with the Desiree plan.
For sure.
Because, I mean, if those guys get to the end with like the Desirees and Chelseas and Angelas of the world, it's starting to feel like that there's a lot of people from the Malolo group, like a Laurel or Michael or even Donathan, that could potentially, we'll be talking about them as maybe, you know, winner candidates.
Exactly.
So
if it's against that group, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's why I think Laurel really screwed up.
I want to talk about the lie that Desiree told this week, or I guess the lie was that the denial that she had, and whether there was any similarities. I know, Eliza, you are a gamer. So let me play this question from Gregory McBean.
What's up, Rob and Eliza? So, Rob, Taryn, as well as a lot of the patrons, love to play games like Secret Age, Mafia, that kind of thing. This episode feel like one of those games to you? It felt like Dez played the red card when she had a choice, and Laurel had to convince the rest of the group that she was fascist. What are your thoughts?
Okay. Eliza, have you ever played Mafia?
Yes.
Okay.
Mafia is the one where it's like the townspeople and the inspector, and somebody gets killed. Right.
Right.
And then you have to be like, oh, yeah.
To me, I thought that this was kind of like this episode where they had to kill one person at the tribal council and it was time to vote. And Desiree was like pleading with them, guys, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. You have to believe me. I'm with you. I'm with you. You're making a huge mistake if you get rid of me. And Laurel's like, no. She's lying, you guys. I'm with you. She's the liar. You have to take her out. And then they had to basically make a decision.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. I love playing Mafia. I love games. I love game nights. I'm such a gamer. Although, you know, I live by the motto, if you're not prepared to lose every friend you've ever had over a board game, you're not playing hard enough.
Yeah.
And so my friends don't love playing with me. I don't know. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I'm very competitive.
Have you lost any friends from playing board games?
They won't play with me anymore, but they will hang out with me in other contexts.
Okay.
So my family doesn't even like playing board games with me.
Yeah. Why? What's your favorite board game?
These days I've been super into Codenames.
Codenames? How do you play that?
Is that not what it's called?
I've just never heard of it. I don't know. It could be called that.
Oh my God. It's really fun. It's so there are like two teams, two spy masters. You get like a little card. It's like almost like Battleship, where it just tells you which blocks are red and which blocks are blue, and then one of them is the one that you can't hit. I can't remember what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But, and they all have words on them. And so I'll be like, okay. And you can only say one word as a clue. And then you can give them a number of cards they're supposed to guess. And they have to guess the words of the right color while avoiding those that belong to the other team. Oh, it's called the assassin card. And so then if they accidentally pick the assassin, your team automatically loses. It's like hitting an eight ball in or something, you know, it's like an automatic loss.
Yeah.
So only the two spy masters know which cards belong to which team. And so you try to give your team clues to guess the right ones, and they have to like interpret. It's really fun. So that's my newest obsession, but old time, like I've always been like a lover of word games. I'm mm-hmm. obsessed with Scrabble, Taboo, 25 words or less, you know, all sorts of word games.
Yeah. No, I like the guessing games like that. I don't have enough friends to play anything that's like you're in teams, Eliza, or anything like that.
I don't think that's true, Rob.
It is. And Nicole hates any sort of games. I'm just waiting for my kids to get bigger so that they can play with me.
You can play with your kids.
Yeah, that's why I had kids.
You just need a couple more kids.
Yeah, I need a couple more.
You can really have teams.
I need a couple more, but I don't think so. I think I'll just hope that they have friends and then they'll come over and then we can get something going. Or maybe they have like they'll have like one friend who has a parent and then we'll work it out that way. Okay, Eliza. All right, let's talk about what's going on with the stick. I know everybody's dying to hear what you have to say. Let's go back to last week where we saw the stick finally in action. I'm going to play the clip from this was Michael at last week's tribal council.
Maybe I'm being a little paranoid, but I'd sure hate to go home with this thing in my pocket. So this was Ozzy's fake hidden immunity idol stick from Survivor Micronesia back in 2007. This one's for Ozzy.
Yes, for Ozzy!
Jerk. What a jerk. I mean, that thing would have been nothing. That was nothing. It was a fucking stick until it was my thing, you know?
Like, right.
Like it was nothing.
Yes.
Ozzy.
Did you like Jeff's reaction here also to this?
This is not just a stick anymore.
I loved it. I loved it. It made me very happy. If only it had not been just a stick when I played it, you know?
Right. Right. So you didn't get enough credit in all of this we're saying, right?
Completely.
Yeah. Because that the stick, I mean, there's been other people that have found an idol, but the stick became a moment when you told Jason it was not an idol and it was just the effing stick.
Exactly. That's how it, I mean, the stick, the reason why it's so special, it's like, think of all the things they're using this season. It's idols and other idols and immunity necklaces and legacy advantages and whatever. Mine is the only item that gained power, like that was just a literal stick and like was never, it wasn't a thing like that production intended to have some power at the moment that it existed. You know, it just became something because of its notoriety, mm-hmm. because of that scene between me and Jason.
Right. And if it wasn't for you, then Jason probably would have just been blindsided with the stick in his pocket. It would have never even been a thing, right?
Right.
So, right. Yes, that I there's something to it. I really feel like that around this era of China and fans versus favorites, like I think that there was a little bit of like this inflection point in the show's trajectory that came out of things like the effing stick.
Right.
It was really James misplaying the idols, the effing stick, and Eric in the necklace. I feel like that there was like
that was a huge era.
It was a shift.
Oh, yeah.
Where Survivor kind of came about, you know, there's all this stuff going on. And then it's also about stupid people doing dumb things also and laughing at them.
Exactly.
and you were a big part of this.
And then if you look and then like you know, JT getting himself voted out with his own idol. And, you know, it was like, just, it continued on and it's fun.
Yeah. It was a real moment. And the stick became such a big thing. I mean, this is 20 seasons ago and the stick was probably the item that people were the most hyped about being back on this season when they announced it and they said, and the stick is going to be back.
I know. Isn't it crazy? I was so excited. I was like beside myself with excitement to like see the stick back on the show and to, you know, see if it could get played properly. And basically, most things this season have been played improperly or uselessly.
Yeah.
I mean, not, you know, but... So I was like, oh, Michael, don't get voted out with the stick in your pocket.
Now, Eliza, did you know that the stick was cursed? That Jeff Probst told us earlier in the season, everybody that touched the stick all got voted out in a row.
You know, that is true that did happen. Listen, don't blame the stick. not the stick's fault that that Ozzy was an overconfident moron and then Jason did the exact same thing. You know, like, don't blame the stick for that. And I didn't go home because the stick was cursed either. I went home because
yeah, what was the curse?
Of a series of unfortunate events, you know?
For you, the curse was that the stick wasn't an idol.
The curse was that the stick wasn't an idol, exactly. Or the curse was that this other stick rammed into Jonathan Penner's knee during a that challenge while we were tied up. It was a totally different stick, but the curse was that then his wound became gangrenous and he had to be medevaced from the game.
Thank you, Eliza. Appreciate that. Thank you for the shout out. Yeah. That other stick. Yeah. That was that. Is that also on Ghost Island?
No, I don't think so. No. I don't even know if we could identify it.
Yeah. But it's been such a big moment that the curse has been reversed now. Michael played the idol for himself last week, and now the curse of the stick is finally gone.
Exactly.
Okay. Eliza, I have another question for you about the stick. This is from Matt in D.C. wants to know if you caught the stick in another season of Survivor.
Hey, guys, it's Matt in D.C. I have a question for Eliza about the effing stick. Eliza, remember that time that Steven tried to break that effing stick in half and he couldn't? Wasn't that funny? Thanks.
Aww. Steven hates when that gets brought up.
That was also a cursed stick, right?
That was. There have been a lot of cursed sticks in Survivor history.
Yeah, those sticks that they can have curses on them, and they're very. Some of them are tough to break. The curses are tough to break, so it all makes sense.
Exactly.
Eliza, we also have seen this season that they brought back Eric's immunity necklace, which is now also an idol, and now Wendell has it in his possession. You, of course, were there. You were a witness to that tribal council where
I sure was.
Yes, where Eric ended up giving the necklace away to, who did he give it to? He gave it to Natalie.
Natalie.
Yes. And you watched firsthand, you had a front row seat to watch Eric get voted out. Another historic Survivor night. What was your first person account of that as it was going on? Because as a juror, you came into that not knowing that that was at all a possibility.
Of course, of course. And so I'm sitting there and he is giving his whole spiel. And, you know, people say, oh, your facial reactions are so extreme. They seem like maybe they're exaggerated for the purposes of television. Let me tell you, it was not exaggerated, not even in the slightest. And anyone who knows me in real life knows that I'm reacting like that to like things that happen all the time. But this was so shocking to me. And, you know, if you've watched an entire episode, maybe you have seen the lead up to something that happens at Tribal Council over the last 3 days of footage, et cetera. And the story is kind of taking you to this place. I've seen nothing. I'm getting to Tribal Council, seeing absolutely nothing over the last 3 days. This is the first time I'm seeing any of it. And so I'm sitting there and Eric is like, you know, I want to prove my loyalty and da da da. And I'm like, no way. There's no way. He's not going to do this. He just said at the last tribal council, I'd be an idiot to give this up. You know, there's no way. And so my mouth is just dropping open and then he takes it off. And I mean, James is cracking up. We are just like, cannot believe that this happened. And of course the women were going to vote him out and what an idiot. And, you know, Parv said, you will go down in Survivor as the dumbest contestant in the history of the show.
Yeah. And has that held up 20 seasons later?
Pretty close. Pretty close. There have been some competition. Some people who have tried to rival that. JT, Tyson. Oh my God. Remember when Tyson voted himself out of the game?
Yeah. I remember.
There have definitely been some dumb moves.
Yeah. And Eric's necklace is back this season. Do you feel like that the curse will be broken for Eric's necklace?
I think so.
Okay.
I think Wendell is.
He won't give it away.
Perceptive and astute. And I don't think he'll give it away. And hopefully he plays it properly. Because, you know, he's been a pleasure to watch.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you about another curse from Survivor, and let me go to Chris from Philly.
Hi, Rob and Eliza. This is Chris from Philadelphia. Eliza, as a former car winner on Survivor, do you believe in the curse of the car? And if so, will the Ghost Island castaways have a chance to reverse the curse by winning a car this season and hopefully actually winning the game? Love to hear your thoughts.
Okay. Eliza, do you believe in the car curse? You won the car in Vanuatu and you became the alleged car curse's first female victim.
Yes, exactly. I was the first woman ever to win a car on Survivor. And had I not won the car, would I have not been voted out in fourth place? I don't think that was the deciding factor.
Okay, so are you saying that you do not believe in the car curse?
Well, I think the complication with the winning of the car is, you know, the person who wins the car is often thought of as someone who, you know, is a threat in individual challenges. And so that person is that, you know, looked upon as a threat. And then there's people are like, well, if I let that person stay, they might make it to the end and vote me out because they're going to win immunity or I won't be able to get rid of them or, you know, whatever. And so maybe that is part of the quote unquote car curse. Like, I think Chris even said to me, he's like, oh, I was scared if you stuck around at final three, you could beat me in an immunity challenge and you might not take me to the end, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that does play a role, but it's not, I don't think it's the car that is cursing you. It's just the challenge performance. I mean, I think a lot of, you know, is there also some correlation between people who've won the family visit and winning, you know, I also won the family visit. And those were two very different types of challenges. The family visit challenge was completely mental and the car challenge was completely physical. So I kind of proved myself to be an all around challenge threat, which obviously nobody respected because then I was still picked last in the pick'em in fans versus favorites. And they were like, oh, cause she's weak. I'm like, you guys are idiots. But anyhow, whatever. Yeah. Then I showed them because then new IRI basically didn't lose a single challenge until the merge.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's just more of being a challenge threat versus, an actual car curse, but because it's been so long since there's been a car, on, I think it was, you know, once they split the tribes by race, Pontiac or whoever GMC pulled out as, sponsor. And so the last time this happened was in Fiji, which was so long ago.
Yes. But now we're back in Fiji
and Yao Man gives the car to Dreams. Oh my God.
I think that the correlation with the car to me was that everybody's out there, everybody's a hater, and then somebody wins a car and then it's almost like, well, I don't want them to win $1 million because they already won a car. Haven't they won enough?
Yeah, that could be part of it too, but I don't know. I still think that's not really a reason why you're not going to vote for someone to win at the end or why you're not going to take them.
Mm. I don't know. Some survivors are real haters.
Oh, true. Obviously most of them are.
Yeah.
But like Colby didn't not win the show because he won the car. He didn't win Survivor because he took the wrong person to the finals. Colby could have been the car winner and the winner of Survivor Australian Outback easily.
Yeah.
If he had just taken Keith.
Yes.
So, you know, you can't blame the car for that, for somebody's stupidity.
Eliza, when I was in the Amazon, I was tempted to throw the car challenge to Heidi because she was telling me that if she won the car, she would be happy and she would just quit the game because she didn't have a car. And that's what, if we just let her have a car, she was losing. And then that was all it would take for her to be happy.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
But I guess Matthew wasn't part of that plan because then he beat her.
What a good memory. Look at you.
Oh, right. That's who won.
Yes.
There are only like, what, 10 of us maybe who won cars. There's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a very big group.
So do you have like an email chain with all of the car winner, the car curse people?
Oh, for sure. Definitely.
Yeah.
Like me, Colby, Lex, Rob, you know, like all of us.
Cindy
like
Hall.
Chat.
Sure.
We chat on the regular about our car curse.
Is it Yao Man or Dreams that's on the email list with you guys?
It's Yao Man because it's the person who actually won the car, even though in that season it cursed both of them, apparently.
Okay. You mentioned Kellen and you see her as somebody who could potentially win the game, but I didn't think she had a great week this week. This is a tweet that we got. This is from Yale Werber, who wanted to ask, we've heard that Desiree got left off of the Chris vote, and this week it looks like Chelsea was in the dark from Kellen about the Desiree vote. Is this a Kellen pattern? Is she now going to turn on Chelsea and Angela? And another one of our callers called in and basically asked, like, isn't this a really bad job by Kellen that she has these women who are her closest allies and then she keeps leaving them in the dark on these votes? Like, how is that a good play on her part?
Oh, it's not a good play at all. Kellen, this is why I said Kellen would be like the dark horse winner. Like, I don't actually see her winning, you know, but Kellen is someone who, I think this is what we call poor jury management.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are not people who are going to be at the end of the game. These are like the people who she's leaving in the dark. Like, I'm sorry, Chelsea's not making it to the end. Angela's not making it to the end. You know, Desiree's already gone now. But like, these are people who she'd been with from the beginning of the game who would have potentially been votes for her at the end if she had just not been such an idiot about it. You know, like, don't leave your friends in the dark when you don't have to. Like, there was no reason for her not to tell Chelsea, hey, listen, this is what's going on. Like, I, you know, the rest of the group really feels like Desiree's not telling the truth and we have to, you know, it's time, we got to get rid of her before she flips on us and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, just tell her. Just tell her what's going to happen.
Yeah. It was a tough spot for Kellen because she had been hearing that it was Desiree and Chelsea who were sort of these co-conspirators, but I asked Desiree about this in the exit interview, and I don't think that Desiree told Chelsea the plan. So I think that Chelsea really was innocent, but she was sort of linked by what the reports were about, oh, it's Desiree and Chelsea coming to get you. So I think that that's why it ended up putting her in a bad spot. But you're right that it's these people, like when we talk about like a Kim Spradlin, it's that they feel like that they're in her alliance and they can trust her no matter what.
Oh,
she's always looking out for them. And I'm not sure if Kellen is making people feel that way.
Right. I think Kim Spradlin is like the perfect example of like excellent jury management, making everyone feel like they're included and going around and just saying all the right things. Like she, you know, I found that season to be pretty stultifying, but she was an excellent winner and mm-hmm. really did everything right.
Yeah. Did Amy have that at all in Vanuatu?
For sure. Amy was really good at just like being direct and being honest with people. And she would approach people and say like, listen, you know, I'm going to vote for you tonight. I just felt like I should tell you, I'm not trying to be dishonest, but here are the reasons why. It's X, Y, and Z reasons. And I'm voting for you and I can't control what everyone else does, but I just want you to know that's what I'm doing. And, you know, she actually got in trouble for it. I don't know if this is like kind of like a production behind the scenes thing.
Mm-hmm.
So she actually, they were like, Amy, we're having really a hard time producing the show because everyone, like, you know, we don't even have a decor. Like, it's really hard to have an episode where you just tell people who's going home.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened, you know, like with Sarge and Chad, you know, it was like this Rory, Sarge, whatever, you know, maybe she didn't tell Rory. I think Rory was like a real blindside, but she was telling the guys, you know, this is what's happening. And so they were like, you have to stop doing that. Like, you really can't do that anymore. And that was, so she still thinks that like sabotaged the whole game because at final seven, when she was going to vote for me, she would have come up to me and been like, hey, Eliza, listen, you know, the girls and I, like, I'm voting for you tonight. And I would have talked her out of it. I would have been like, Amy, don't do this. Let's figure something out. I'm nothing if not like scrappy and a scrambler and like, you know, when people are like, I'm voting for you. Like, I'm like, no, let's not do this. Let's figure out another way. Like, here's what's going to happen. If you vote for me, blah, 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 you're going to lose because blah, 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 blah reasons, you know, and kind of playing out the game. So had she still been allowed to tell me, then maybe we would have flipped the game in a totally different way. And then the whole season would have turned out differently. But they actually were like, hey, you have to stop doing that. So it's just like an interesting tidbit from Vanuatu.
Mm-hmm. Was that one of the reasons why then you wanted to work closely with her, besides from the familiarity that you knew that she was kind of a straight shooter like that when you got to Micronesia?
Oh, definitely. I mean, also, she was just like one of my closest friends, and she's the only person with whom I was on both seasons. And I mean, I love her like a sister.
What is she up to now?
She is living in New Zealand.
Whoa.
Yeah. She's like leading tour groups, like, you know, taking kids on horses on the beach and she's living her best life.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question that is also going to have some Vanuatu tie-ins. And this is from Nick from Sydney.
Hey, Robin, Eliza. It's Nick from Sydney here. And I was just wondering what Kellen was thinking when she brought up to Dominic that she was worried about an all-guys alliance. I can only imagine that his immediate response that wasn't shown on camera was, hang on a minute, there's already more girls than guys, and you're targeting a guy, so how do I not know you're doing a girls alliance? Seems a bit weird to me that she would bring up something like that that can implicate her more than it really implicates him. If Michael went home, it would be 6-4, whereas when a girl goes home, it's only 5-5. Bit strange for her to tip her hand, I think. As you guys both participated on Battle of the Sexes seasons, I thought it might be an interesting thing for you guys to talk about. Thanks.
Okay, Eliza, so in both of your seasons, the gender-based alliance was a big talking point.
Definitely, definitely. You know, it was Battle of the Sexes in Vanuatu, the gender season, and then the women couldn't keep it together, and a man actually won the season, and then obviously the opposite happened in Fans versus Favorites. It was not split by gender, and then the women ended up taking over and a woman won.
Mm-hmm.
I was not part of that, but
no.
I wasn't part of it on either season, kind of. But, you know, it's fine.
Yeah. All right. So this week we had this scene where Dominic and Kellen are talking. And so we have a little bit of this exchange between Kellen and Dominic, and I want to play this for you.
Okay. And we want Michael
Pop. Right. Tonight.
Now. Now.
Now.
Yeah. I mean, I think like there's not that much that is, like there's been no talk of basically voting on gender lines this season, right? Mm-hmm.
There has not been to this point, but that Kellen seems like she is bringing up the issue in a situation where the women are outnumbering the men. And I'm not necessarily sure why she brought that up in terms of gender when she could have sort of brought it to Dominic as, hey, Michael is Malolo. Why are we voting out a Navidi when there are still Malolo left, as opposed to, you know, why are all of the men voting together?
Right, right. I mean, I really think it should have been more, and I do sort of think it was more about the fact that he was Malolo, but also that he is like a very strong competitor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that's, you know, typically what happens at the merge, you know, once it becomes individual challenges, even though, as Dalton Ross pointed out, women have won like 10 of the last 11 or 11 of the last 12 individual immunity challenges from this season to last season. Like, women have won so many of the individual challenges. But people think of it as, oh, men are all going to win these individual challenges, so we need to get rid of the strong guys.
Yeah, it's interesting in terms of the challenges that we've seen so far this season that we've had a number of just like these endurance type challenges of that we had basically like, okay, hold that stick for a really long time, not the effing stick, and then balance the thing on it. And then this week was like, you know, hold your arms really straight. And then we had the gross food eating competition. I watched the preview for next week, and it's another one of these things of like, you know, hold the handles for this thing for a long while. We have not really seen anything that's super athletic in terms of immunity challenges for individual this season.
That's true. And I don't know why. I mean, they've got the water in Fiji is just so stunningly beautiful. Like do some swimming challenges, do some, you know, and not just for teams, like do individual reward challenges and make people like dive down for things and swim. And, you know, like when my car challenge, like we had to swim out, go run over a platform, run over an outrigger, dive down, get a flag, come back to the beach, go back out. You know, it was like truly physical exertion. Or the first individual immunity challenge on Vanuatu, where we had to run out, climb up to a platform, grab a flag, jump down, sprint back to the beach, put it in your thing. You know, it's like, and then they do heats and you're just like beyond physically exhausted. And so it's kind of fun to watch people like physically exert themselves. Now, would I want that every time and nothing, you know, balance related or puzzle related or whatever? No, not every time, but like you would think they would do that sometimes. And also there haven't even been that many puzzles. You know, it's basically all of these balancing a ball on a thing. And it's kind of like a little bit dull for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't find those
are not
super
my
exciting.
Favorite things to watch. I'd much rather watch like, you know, people trying to solve or like, God, our challenges were so inventive. Like there was that one where the big face where you had to flip all the things to be the right colors and you got to look at a pattern and then you had to make the pattern on your board.
Yeah.
You remember that one?
Vaguely.
It was like a, like there were like circles and triangles and they were all different colors. And then Jeff showed you like a big one of it. And then you had to, then he put it away and you had to get it correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a memory thing. I don't know. Anyhow, it's just now all about balancing and holding things and standing on small platforms and.
Yeah, it's weird that this season has been like that. Last season wasn't like that. I feel like that there were a couple, even the challenges that Chrissy had won involved sort of like running around and then doing a puzzle. So it's weird that this season has started off this way. Maybe we'll see what happens down the stretch, or there's some particular reason why they had to do a lot of challenges that are set up this particular way for this season. But yeah, so going back to this Kellen and Dominic conversation, yeah, I didn't really love the way that she did that, because if she could potentially, you know, get Michael out of the game and not sort of bring the gender issue to the forefront, it's another one of these things like what Kim was able to do in One World, where she gets Troy-Zan voting out, you know, Michael and Leaf. And what he doesn't realize is that, you know, Kim is sort of like setting up the ability to go back to the all women thing, which happens to be her all women alliance from her starting tribe, and not go with the alliance that Troy-Zan thinks they have.
For sure.
So
absolutely.
Just, it's got a lot of options. Options are huge.
Huge.
Okay. This is a question also about Kellen. This is from Ariel.
Hi, Rob and Eliza. This is Ariel. My question has to do with Helen Kellener and her extra vote. At this point, now that it seems as though her back is kind of up against the wall, or she's not in as good of a position, what are the different ways that you think that extra vote will come in handy? How and when is the best time for her to use it? Thanks.
Okay. Eliza, have you given any thought to when Kellen should pull out the extra vote? It feels like that the tide is turning against her. Could the extra vote be able to dig her out of this?
I think if she uses it, like to use it soon, it's not going to have enough of an impact. I mean, there are just too many people left. So if it turns out everyone is voting, if everyone's turning against her and they try to vote her out, one extra vote's not going to make the difference. She can use it up through final five. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
So, I mean, yeah, eventually she might have to use it to save herself. But I think, you know, it gains usefulness as the numbers dwindle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't know where she's going. It seems like that her plan is to go along these, okay, let's get rid of all the Malolo people. And then when it comes down to Jess Navidi, does she feel like that she has the advantage over, okay, if it's just Dominic and Wendell, when it gets down to all Navidi, then Chelsea and Angela and Desiree, they were all going to just vote with her and then take out Dominic and Wendell. I guess it makes sense on paper.
Yeah.
but it was going to be a very boring season.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to. Yeah, exactly. That will not be fun. But, you know, the way Jeff talks about this season, I have to believe that we're in for some more exciting things happening.
Yeah.
Towards the end. It can't just be like everyone getting picked off.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. All right. Let me play another voicemail for you. This has to deal with the Survivor jury. I'm going to play you this question. This is from Lorenzo from New York.
Hi, Rob and Eliza. It's Lorenzo from New York. Big fan of both of you guys. Eliza, my question for you is about how you think as a juror. In Survivor Vanuatu, you were the penultimate juror, and in Survivor Fans Are His Favorites, you were the first juror. So I guess my question is, as somebody who has been both in the early jury and the late jury phase of the game, is there a difference in the way you approach the vote coming from those two perspectives? And as an early juror, do you consider more your own personal interactions with the people in the finals, even though they may be more limited? Or do you put more weight on what the people who were voted out after you say, who might have gotten to spend more time and seen more of the moves of the final two or final three develop? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks. Bye.
Eliza, I don't know if you've ever been asked this question before, but you have this unique perspective as somebody who's watched most of the jury phase of the game play out from the jury and somebody who got to see the whole jury phase of the game play out from in the game. And in which perspective did you feel like that you were better informed?
That's a great question. And I haven't been asked it before, so I appreciate that. So I approached it differently. So I appreciate the fact that I approached it completely differently on both of my seasons. So, you know, on when I got voted off in Vanuatu, I had basically 48 hours to come up with my jury question and figure out what I was going to say. And I already basically knew who it was going to come down to. You know, the very next day I knew who it was going to come down to.
Right. And you had a rough jury speech for Chris.
Oh yeah. I had a rough jury speech for both of them. I mean, but giving rough jury speeches is like my favorite thing. It's so fun.
Yeah.
So I also had a rough jury speech for Parvati and Amanda in Fans Versus Favorites. And I did other stuff too, which obviously did not make air because it was very extensive.
Well, like why? What did you do?
Have I never told you this? I'm sure I've told you this story. So, you know how they no longer do a fallen comrades challenge on Survivor? Well, I decided that Parvati and Amanda should be subject to a fallen comrades challenge because, you know, when I spent time out there with everyone, I knew everyone's siblings' names and their dogs' names and their family members and their jobs and what city they lived in and what was important to them, you know, cause I observe that about people and I take that in and I try to, you know, you just listen when people talk and you kind of absorb that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think that challenge was always a great way to demonstrate to the jury that you actually gave a shit, not like you don't get to bullshit them. You don't get to be like, blah, blah, blah. But if you're like, what tattoo does this person have on their back? And like you spent 36 days with that person and you never noticed the tattoo on their, like, you know, or something like that. It's like, it shows that you actually didn't ever care about them as a person, no matter how much you say, oh, I really cared. I listened when you talk, blah, blah, blah. But you don't know about the things that are the most important to them. So I did a fallen comrades challenge with Parvati and Amanda.
Yeah.
And they failed miserably. I mean, this is probably why it wasn't shown, because it would have made both of them look so bad. And this is CBS's, you know, this is their final two. Like, they can't both look like horrible bitches and idiots and whatever. So I asked them a bunch of questions about Sari, who they spent 38 days with, about, you know, Alexis, who they spent 36 days with, about me, who they spent 24 days, you know, and and I asked them questions about each of us, about things that were really like important in our lives, and they didn't know any of the answers. And yes, I also gave them like a harsh little speech/lecture.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that was fun. But now I got sidetracked and I don't know.
We were talking about your perspective as a juror.
Yes, exactly. So when I got voted off, and I was the first juror, I decided to write a jury speech for every single person left in the game. because it was like kind of like therapeutic. So I had like a journal and I just wrote out like what I would say to each person left in the game. And then as people got voted out, then I would just like start over and I would just write it for every other, like for everyone left in the game again and again. And so like I had so much time to really formulate what I wanted to say and what I wanted to elicit and everything. And also you're kind of, when you're at Ponderosa, it's a beautiful prison, but you're in jail. You can't go anywhere. You can't leave the property. You can't get on the internet. You can't contact anyone. You are just like totally trapped. So, I had a very long time to think about it and write my speeches and everything. So I think that, what was the question again?
Your perspective as a juror. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's just different because you're like watching the whole game play out when you're the first juror, you're just watching so much of the game play out that you are not present for. So it's not necessarily based on your personal interactions. Like you want to, you know, vote for the person who played the better game, who, you know, is the reason, you know, who mm-hmm. deserves to win the game. And I think both times I voted for the person who more directly screwed me over personally. And that was because I thought like they were the most deserving winner and they performed the best at Final Tribal.
What about the new Final Tribal Council format? Do you like that better or worse?
So in some ways it's better because it does eliminate the like really stupid stuff. Like, tell us why you played a good game and the person next to you didn't, you know, and like, it eliminates the dumb questions that people would get up and inevitably ask. But I also think I did and will miss the brilliant jury speeches that people have gave over the years and the interesting, insightful and hilarious questions that people have asked directly when it was like their moment to shine.
Yeah.
So yes, it protects against like the 80% of questions, which are going to be complete crap, but also it does nullify some of the like fun of Final Tribal.
All right. Let me ask you this next question. This is from the great Vic Shutty.
Hey, Rob. This is Vic Shutty here. I want you to power rank these survivor dreams. Okay, first, Dominic's dream about Laurel's dad being Martin Sheen and some delicious breakfast. Shambo's dream about killing Dave Ball over some chickens. Cowboy's little of this, little of that playing voodoo dream. And Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream as told to by coach that dictated he must save Randy at that night's tribal council. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Okay, no mention of car curse dreams there. Eliza, what did you think of this dream that Dominic had on the show this week?
Well, remind me to tell you this dream I had. It was me and you having breakfast in your kitchen, and Martin Sheen was your father.
So, Martin Sheen is Laurel's father.
You know, there's almost nothing that I hate more than listening to the content of other people's dreams. I find it to be if friends bring it up, I'm like, please don't talk to me about what you dreamt about. Like, really, can you just give me the really brief one-sentence synopsis? Like, I can't sit there and listen to stories about dreams. I don't know why. It's one of those things I cannot sit through. So when he started talking about, I think that was like, I got up to get more wine. Like in that moment, I was like, this is boring. It means nothing. I can't hear this. Like it's, I don't even know why they aired it, you know, like having it. I mean, I guess they think it's funny, but it's like, it's as boring as when we talk about recipes, because we're all starving, you know, how many hours did you spend talking about recipes and what you would eat and what you would make and how you cook it? And I mean, it is so dull as to be irrelevant. And so people's dreams over the seasons, like those are the moments when I just tune out of the show.
Boy, you don't think there's any, I mean, I wish we had like somebody who with a psychology background on the show that could really analyze this, because why Martin Sheen?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. You think it means anything?
I don't know. I mean, Martin Sheen. I mean, who are Martin Sheen's kids? Charlie Sheen. He used to say winning. Is that a Dominic? Is that a tell that Laurel might actually be the Charlie Sheen and winning? Maybe she's Emilio Estevez.
I mean, maybe. I mean, Martin Sheen also played. I mean, if we're going there, though, the Martin Sheen played, you know, one of my favorite characters in the history of television, which is Can you guess? Do you know who I'm going to say?
The president?
Yeah, of course. President Jed Bartlett. You know, like yeah. I am a diehard West Wing fan, and I actually have been rewatching the whole series, and it's like a dagger to the heart. Like it just depresses me every day. But we don't have to talk about politics. but yeah, so maybe because you know Josiah Bartlett was president, so
did he make Martin breakfast?
I have no idea.
Okay, all right, yeah, I thought that was interesting. So yeah. We'll see. Maybe Martin Sheen will be at the finale.
I doubt it, but maybe.
If he's a big Survivor fan. Okay.
Somebody should let him know that he appeared on this week's episode.
Yeah, somebody should tweet to Martin Sheen and let him know about this. Okay. Let me play you this question. Here's one from Brent the Shower Man.
Shower Man?
Hey, Eliza. Hey, Rob. This is Brent the Shower Man. I just want to know how disappointed you think Seabass was when he found out that the brownies they got on the reward weren't actually pot brownies. Thanks. Bye.
Eliza, is that possible that when Seabass heard about these brownies?
Meat, cheeses, and brownies for dessert.
He thought they might be different brownies?
I don't think he would have ever thought that they would be giving him edibles.
I don't know, Eliza. Listen to this.
You don't even need food when you get highs like that, man. It was so sick.
So sick.
Yeah, that guy's definitely a total stoner. I mean, he's like a fishing guide. I mean, what does he do? Like, what?
Does he's a he just seafood sit on a entrepreneur. And
he just sits on a boat and smokes weed all day? I don't know. I can't imagine being on a season with him or like even meeting him in person, because I don't know that we would have anything to say to one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he has told us what his day is like, Eliza.
So
it doesn't feel any different.
Normal day for Seb, right? Wait okay. for someone to text me. Beach question mark. Stony baloney, eat a bagel, and it's like 11.
Yeah, that's how the day gets started.
Stony baloney, eat a bagel. Yeah, exactly. I mean, listen, that's one way to live your life. No judgment. I wish I got a text at 11 in the morning saying beach question mark,
beach?
And I could just go have a bagel and go to the beach every day.
Yeah.
I've obviously made some crazy bad life decisions because that is not my life.
Yeah. Seb is living his best life.
He is living his best life.
So, and yes, I think it was just regular brownies for him. Let me play you this question. This one is from Tracy.
Hey, Robin, Eliza. It's Tracy. Teresa from Know-It-Alls. I've been introducing my boyfriend / roommate, D, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, to Survivor through the season. I was wondering if you think this season is a better or worse season for a person to be introduced to Survivor, especially how much the season references previous events and seasons. Thanks.
Okay. Eliza, is this a good first season for people to watch or a bad first season for people to watch because of all the backstory?
I mean, I think they do an okay job of explaining where these things came from and whatnot. Like you get like a little bit of a recap scene when an item is introduced.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say this is probably like one of the best seasons to start with. I think it might be like a little bit tough. And especially, I think it would be also just, it's more fun to watch it when you've seen some of the seasons that it's referencing. Like even if you watch Fans versus Favorites and you haven't seen people's original seasons from the Favorites tribe, it doesn't have like a material impact on the show. You can still like mm-hmm. get a feel for who everyone is and figure out what their game is and whatever, you know, it doesn't, I mean, yeah, you won't know like Fairplay's whole history exactly when you just watch Fans versus Favorites, but it's still like just such a fun season to watch. Even if you're new to the show, or Heroes Villains, even if you haven't seen people's past seasons, but I think this one maybe is slightly complicated with all of the referencing of prior seasons.
I think it's actually a decent season for somebody to watch for the first time, because I think it sort of then lets them know, okay, there's also the show has like this rich backstory of that there's a lot of other stuff and you sort of see highlights. And I think you can feel like you know a lot about these different seasons without having to actually watch it. So I think it's fine as a first season. I don't think that somebody should be scared to not watch this season because they haven't seen all the other previous seasons.
Yeah, for sure. They can still watch it.
It's fine. It's fine. Okay. Eliza, this is a question that we got from one of our listeners. This one is from Woody.
Hey, Rob. This is Woody Johnson from East Rutherford, New Jersey. Would love to get to your thoughts on a note I just received. After season 49, the Jets drafted a quarterback from USC in the top five. During season 54, Mark Sanchez ran the ball directly to the backside of his offensive lineman, fumbling and creating the most infamous fumble in NFL history. For the last 5 years, Mark has been living on Ghost Island, honing his skills, and morphing into Sam Darnold. It is uncertain whether his powers have increased or not. But the question for you is, can he reverse the curse?
Oh, my God.
I don't want to hear a word about Mark Sanchez. Mark Sanchez has nothing to do with Sam Darnold, Woody, okay? And he's going to reverse the curse. That there's no USC quarterback curse. I'll believe in the car curse before I believe in that.
I mean, wasn't the butt fumble ranked as like the Jets' most embarrassing moment in history? Like,
so what? So what? We're not talking about that.
Listen, why would somebody call in with this question? They know how sensitive you are about the Jets.
Eliza, do you feel like that your beloved Giants are in good hands with Eli Manning for the foreseeable future?
No.
No, do you disagree with what they did this week?
No, I mean, listen, Eli should never have been benched last season, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
He's been like a solid quarterback. We've won two Super Bowls in the last, decade, I want to say.
Yeah, I think a little more than that.
It was 07 and...
I mean, it's 18.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's right. You're right. It is. Oh, my God. I just can't even believe how many years have elapsed. That's crazy. So, yeah. So, you know, he still was like, he took us to the, he took us to the
promised land.
The promised land twice.
Mm-hmm.
in my like adult life. And I have to feel pretty happy and grateful about that. Do we have someone who's going to take over for him when he's gone, which will probably be sooner rather than later?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. No, not really. You know, we've got our backups are not great. And then we just drafted a quarterback in the fourth round. But
wow, look at you. You're on top of that.
I mean, I follow the Giants. I didn't follow that much else about the draft.
Yeah. What about Chris Noble? He can toss a rock.
Chris Noble, isn't he a character? Like, what a great find, you know? That guy got plucked out of whatever, modeling the pages of, you know, the billboards of Times Square to like go on Survivor. And he did not disappoint, you know, like that. He made the show really fun.
Mm-hmm.
He is a hilarious character. Love him or love to hate him. You know, he's still, it's unarguable that like he added a lot to this season. And I think, you know, I was pretty disappointed when he went home. I really liked that feud between him and Dominic. I thought it added a lot of color to the season.
Yeah. What about Donathan? Do you have any thoughts on Donathan this season?
Donathan cracks me up. I mean, not since James Clement have we had someone who is a native English speaker have to have so many subtitles.
Not even JT?
Not even JT.
Wow.
And I think Ty had a lot of subtitles, but Ty is not a native English speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were talking about someone who grew up speaking English, who maybe speaks no other language, and he is unintelligible, and it is hilarious.
Yeah. Did you like when he found the idol this week?
You know, it's so many idols. It's just like idol, idol, idol.
Yeah.
And I liked that he had to find the other half.
The other half of the Scott Pollard idol, the cursed Scott Pollard idol.
Ugh.
Eliza, you know, we were talking about Chris Noble and that Ponderosa video that he made that my researchers here tell me that you were the subject of the first ever Ponderosa video.
Accurate. That is true. I was the first ever Ponderosa video. They started that on Survivor 16 and I was the first, juror. So I was the mayor of Ponderosa and that was, we started the whole thing, this whole amazing thing that now exists.
Yes.
and makes music videos.
What did you do in the first ever Ponderosa video?
You know, I don't remember. I mean, it couldn't have been that riveting. I was just by myself and I definitely didn't do a rap video. So I think it was like, you know, my weigh in and just what it was like being there. And Honestly, I don't remember. I should go back and watch. I bet it's still on CBS.com.
Well, let me see. I looked it up on YouTube. Can I play this? Let's see what's
the 10th person voted out the first member of our jury.
Yeah, there I am eating.
Eliza, the tribe has spoken.
Okay, you're getting voted out. Okay, Ponderosa, life in Ponderosa.
Didn't work out, but I'm eating brownies.
You're eating brownies. I'm
myself, mayor of Ponderosa. I will be there to greet Jason when he comes next, unless he wins immunity. And then I will be there to greet Eric. And then I will be there to greet Alexis. And then I will be there to greet Natalie. And then the five of us can sit there and be like, could have been final five, guys. Way to go. Good job. You're real smart.
Oh, my God. I'm
so this is moments after the effing stick. The effing stick should have had a Ponderosa video, too. And then you're raiding a refrigerator. And then you are back in Ponderosa.
Based on all the food here. It's definitely really disappointing to be voted out at this point. I'm excited to have made the jury, which means I get to be involved for the rest of the game. I get to sit there and roll my eyes during every tribal council when the bull spews out of everyone's mouths.
Yeah, you called your shot with that one, too. So you set the tone at Ponderosa.
I was, like, watching myself eat. I'm, like, eating cheese and...
All right, so you did it, Eliza. Wow, look at you. Game changer.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah. Oh my God, it's kind of fun. I'm like, now I'm sucked in. I want to just like watch all my Ponderosa.
Yes. Yeah, and then, are there any highlights from the rest of the Ponderosa in Fans versus Favorites?
Oh my God. Well, like when Jason got voted off, when Ozzy got voted off, when Jason got voted off, and we were just like, guys, what are you doing? And we were just getting drunk and taking shots. And one of my favorite things, and I, to be honest, now I can't remember if it ended up on a Ponderosa video, but I think it had to have, because this was one of the greatest moments basically ever in my life. I've never laughed so hard. Like, I thought I was going to pee all over myself because we were laughing so hard. I had tears streaming down my face. God. So Ozzy tried to keep up with James in drinking, which is always a mistake. No one can keep up with James in drinking. And so they each drank like maybe like a handle of Jack Daniels. And okay. Ozzy got so wasted that he peed inside our little, like that kitchen area that you saw, like that little indoors. He like walks over to the corner and just starts peeing on the floor. And we're all like, Ozzy, what are you doing? Just walk out the front door. Like, what are you doing? And he's just like, nope. Like just not even having it. He lays back down and is just like so dead to the world that Alexis and I decide to start drawing on him. This is so childish and juvenile, and I know it is, but like we could not help ourselves. And by the way, like I think we're having the meeting with like Mark and Jeff the next morning to talk about our jury questions. And so we take Sharpie and we just start writing all over him, like penises. And like, we wrote Parvati, I heart Parvati across his face because he was so mad at Parvati, obviously. And we were just like drawing all over him. And every time he would like just slightly like move or be like, we would like run away, like screaming and like, oh my God, I'm like crying, laughing. I think when I'm describing it, it doesn't sound as funny.
No, but so then the final tribal council is coming. So what did they do?
So we were hoping he wouldn't notice and that he would show up to his meeting the next morning with production. You know, all the producers were coming over with like penises all over himself and, mm-hmm. and Parvati written on his face and all this stuff. And unfortunately, he noticed. And so he like washed it off, but you could still see remnants of it. And we really cracked ourselves up.
Can you see it
retribution
in the final tribal council? If you like still frame it?
I don't think so.
Okay. That was the last season not in HD.
Exactly. Thank the Lord.
Yeah. Had it been in HD, maybe we could have seen some of your pranking on Ozzy.
I know. Exactly.
Eliza, we missed you the other night in Boston that I had this one guy that was just like yelling during the show.
Oh, was it me?
No,
was it like
it wasn't
somebody
you.
Trying to be like me?
Maybe he was trying to be like you, but he was very distracting.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I've set a bad precedent.
Yes. And he was yelling from the seat like, Steven is right. He was like a Steven Stan that was all drunk and yelling in the audience.
That's real weird.
I know. On so many levels.
Yeah, I'm sorry that that happened. And I'm sorry that I've like set the precedent for that. That like when I yell during the show, it's acceptable. And so other people think it's acceptable.
I don't think that he was like using you as the precedent. I don't think he was like, hey, Eliza does it, so I can do it too.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. That he had to be removed from the show.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Whew, that's serious.
Yeah. They weren't messing around. Okay. Eliza, would you be checking under the shelter every day if you were on Survivor?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's a good, it's a good move now.
They've done it a few times now, you know? It's like, I'd be checking the bottoms of plates. I'd be like looking in every napkin, you know, if I were on a reward challenge, it'd be like, I would be a total lunatic. I never had that opportunity. You know, they only had an idol hidden on Exile when I was on Survivor the second time, and the first time they had no idols.
Do you like the way that there are idols at Ghost Island and on the beach as well? Should it be one or the other?
It doesn't need to be one or the other. It just needs to be fewer idols.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it can't be, we can't have another situation like what happened to Suri last season.
Yes. That made you very upset.
That was very upsetting. That was exceptionally upsetting. And it was really outrageous. It's like, come on, really? This is so stupid. This game has not even become a game. It's like, you know, it wasn't fun.
Have you been disappointed with the way that they've played the games on Ghost Island?
Oh my God, massively disappointed.
Yes.
Like, it's not a game. You can't call it a game. It's not a game.
What is it?
It's nothing. It's just, okay, like, let's play a game. Pick A or B. Okay, B. Too bad it was A. Ha ha, you lose. Like, that's not a game.
Yeah.
A game requires thought, strategy, you know, something.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people have been disappointed with all of the rock picking, where it's been so random that you go to Ghost Island. How did it work in terms of Survivor fans versus favorites, who would get picked to go to Exile Island?
You know, it's funny. It was kind of just, they never said to us that it had to be unanimous. They just said it's kind of like, oh, majority rules, like, just okay, who's going? And people would be like, okay, I think we should send this person, and everyone would be like, yeah, okay, or someone would volunteer or whatever. But we never did rocks once, never. And it's super stupid. I really don't like it, but I understand that otherwise the Dominant Alliance just gets to send their people or decide every time. And if you're outnumbered, then that's no fun either. So I don't know how you solve that, how you fix it. But why does it have to be unanimous? I don't know.
Yeah.
Cause I guess then they feel that if you're just outnumbered, then you've got no hope. Like, you know, then you'll never get to go to Exile. You'll never get an advantage. You'll never get to play a game. Although games need to be like decided by rules, and there has to be skill, strength, luck. Like I guess like in some very, very, very basic definition of a game, like luck does play a part in picking, you know, one of these things, but like, why couldn't they have made actual games like a game, like a puzzle or like a something that the person has to solve?
Yeah, something simple. I think they just wanted something that wasn't going to eat up a lot of time.
But then they could have just edited it out. They didn't have to show it every time if it wasn't interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But like just picking, I don't know.
Yeah. Ugh. Eliza, I've said that they should make it that they should draw rocks, but the rock draw should be for who gets to pick who goes to Ghost Island.
Ooh.
Like that would be a little more fun.
That would be so much more fun. Can you let Jeff know?
I'll let him know. Next time I see him, I'll mention that. I don't know if he's super receptive to sort of just like getting pitches like that.
Well, then tell Dalton Ross to do it, because he really is he really is receptive to Dalton. Dalton has like changed the show mm-hmm. like multiple times.
Yeah. Now, Eliza, that here we are now, and it's been, you know, 20 seasons since they brought you back. Do you have any interest in doing the show again?
Oh my God, of course.
Yes. Oh, okay.
I mean, it's every time I don't get asked, I'm like, oh, thank God. But also part of me, you know, desperately wants to go on and have a third chance and, you know, become one of the elite few who've gotten to play this game three times mm-hmm. and see if I could do any better.
Yeah.
And I will always love the show and love the all the aspects of it, except for the whole being starving and miserable and paranoid and people trying to vote you out. And actually, no, you know, it's funny. actually pretty terrible, but I still love it somehow.
Yeah. And you were the only person that made the merge from the favorites that they haven't brought back yet for a third season. So maybe you're due.
I am due, those jerks. Although now it's HD and now I'm 35 and like, I don't know. It's like, might be bad news for me. People will be like, damn, Eliza didn't age well. Back to our original conversation.
You brought it full circle.
I know, right?
Yes. Is there anybody from the season? I feel like that you usually get like a good hate into somebody from the season. Is there nobody this season? Or are they already gone?
You know, I don't find them that hateable. There's no one who, while I'm watching, I'm like, oh my God, I hate this person so much. Because like, none of them are like such, they're not like really big jerks.
Maybe you mellowed out, Eliza. You were fantastic to catch up with here. Is there anything else
you
that you
too.
Feel like we didn't get to cover?
No, because we talked about TV Party App early on. I wanted to tell everyone that that's where I'm sharing.
Where every week you and Corinne are live on the East Coast.
Exactly.
Chatting it up. It is a real party.
It's a real party.
Not just a party in name.
And we're doing videos and everything. And if you follow me on Twitter, you can expect my, you know, I'm just ranting about the world, the state of the world.
Yes.
No, it's funny. I actually say that my Instagram and my Twitter are like two totally, it's as though they're two totally different people. Mm-hmm. Because my Instagram is like, hey, look at me living my best life. Here's my cute dog. Look at this sunset. Love it. Travel, blah, blah, blah. And then my Twitter is like, the world is going to shit. We have to save the world. Fix it. All these people are terrible. You know,
yeah.
It's like the very ranty, angry version of me about politics and the world in general and my job and other stuff. So if you like either of those things, you'd like to see the pretty sunset pictures in my dog, or you'd like to hear my rants, I'm E Orleans on both of them, at E-O-R-L-I-N-S.
Yes. We actually pulled a tweet from the other night where you were upset with the MTA. You said, hey, at MTA, you suck. I was stuck on a train for the past 20 minutes. What the hell is going on? I hate you. I need to get home. Don't you know it's Survivor night? Assuming if I ever make it home, I'll be on the TV Party app with Corinne Sanity during the show tonight.
Yep, I was very frustrated.
What was going on?
There are signal delays because the MTA is completely outdated. We spend no money on infrastructure. You know, the city is falling apart and so many people rely on the subway to get places, especially people in low-income communities in New York. Not to say I'm one of them, but like my clients who have no other way to get places, who travel long distances to get to their jobs and school and mm-hmm. whatever. And it's just so exceptionally frustrating how inept the MTA is and how terrible it's been.
Yeah.
So I was very angry because Brian was already here at my apartment waiting for me and I'm sitting on a train that's just stuck and I'm so mad when I was tweeting.
Yeah. I can't think of anything worse.
Yeah.
Be rough. All right.
Totally.
Well, Eliza, thank you so much. You were so
of
great
course.
Today.
Rob, this was so much fun.
Yeah.
It's always great to talk to you.
All right. And then do you think 8 years from now we'll still be doing this?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, okay. Good. That's the best news I've had today.
You don't think so?
I hope so.
I mean, Survivor's not going anywhere.
Okay, good. I mean, I've got kids that got to go to college, Eliza.
And kids that need to go on Survivor. They're going to do a Children of Survivor season.
No.
There will be a day when kids of people like, you know, like, I mean, who wouldn't want to see Terry Dietz's son mm-hmm. after, you know, the tie into the show, like Terry Dietz's son go on Survivor.
Yeah, or, that'd be a good story.
You know, there's so many other amazing children of contestants who would make a great season.
Okay.
What about Jeremy and Val's gorgeous children?
Yes.
I would watch those kids.
Yeah. They were in Boston too. And Jeremy said that me and Nicole have to catch up to them because they have four kids now. I said, oh no.
Oh yeah.
No
way.
Are you guys going for
3 and 4?
No, I don't want to play games that bad, Eliza. That's it.
I mean, you gotta have teams of two.
No, we have our hands full.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yes. All right. Eliza, thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
Of course,
really appreciate it.
Of course.
Okay.
Great talking to you.
The great Eliza Orleans. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Eliza Orlins back here on the podcast just in time for her 8-year anniversary of appearance number one back on the podcast. I know I'm going to get a lot of messages from people unless I say something about, hey, what happened to social media this week? But it wasn't great. There wasn't a lot to talk about. So I kind of feel like rather than beholden to the segment, if there's not that much stuff going on in the world of Survivor social media, I'm just going to skip it rather than slump through it if there's nothing going on there. So I apologize about that. I know a lot of people look forward to it, but hopefully the survivors will tweet some interesting stuff this week, and then we'll get back to it next week on the podcast. Lots of fun stuff coming up next week where we're going to have on the feedback show. Rourke will be here in the studio. So very much looking forward to that feedback show next week on the podcast. All right. So we're going to now get set up for the Wiggle Room coming up on Monday. I actually was playing a bunch of wand-offs for Nicole Cesternino last night, and she was actually tickled by the Wiggle Room wand off. So maybe there's some hope that one day we can turn her around on the wand off as a whole. So we'll see what happens. But looking forward to this week's edition coming up on Monday. Who knows? Maybe even Lauren Rimmer might submit something for this week's show. So look for that. Usually drop that on Monday night. And of course, just another benefit of being a patron of Rob Has a Podcast. We'll get all of those wand offs up in the SoundCloud for you guys to listen to and much more when you check out our Patreon page at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Have a good one, everybody. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say about the show. Take care. Bye.